You're listening to the Wine Country Live Morning Show with Barry Martin
on KVON Napa, 1440 AM at KVON.com.
Right now, it's time for us to have our weekly visit with Dr. Karen Relucio, Napa County's public health officer, joining us here on Wine Country Live once again. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Barry. How are you?
I'm okay. Made it through another week, and we'll see if this one pans out. So here we are on the cusp of indoor gatherings resuming with, of course, restrictions as of the 15th of this month. We are just sort of barely in the orange tier, hanging on by our fingernails. What's your confidence level right now?
I think we're going to stay in the orange tier, and it's not because of our case rate decreasing. So if you were to just look at our case rate strictly, we would have been in the red. But there is a framework shift once again where it's going to be more difficult to move to a more restrictive tier. The thing that has to happen to move to a more restrictive tier is that you have to see more hospitalizations, particularly among vulnerable populations. And I can tell you with confidence, we are not seeing hospitalizations increase with our cases.
That is certainly very, very good news. And it's easy to lose sight sometimes of the fact that everything that you and the public health community has been focused on has been keeping people out of hospitals. And if it weren't for the dangerousness of the disease, we wouldn't have had all the trouble that we've had. The case rate, though, as you say, is not really going to determine things, but we're still seeing some cases, but it has dropped way off from where we had that little outbreak a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah. We've had, if we were to look at our case rates, we are in the red range, but our testing positivity and health equity testing positivity rates are in orange. Our hospitalizations are not going up. So based on, the shift in the framework rules, we are not likely going to regress to the red tier. I think we are going to stay solidly in orange.
That's very good news. So in terms of testing right now, I was just looking at a story questioning whether we're going to get blindsided here in California because we're not focused on testing any longer and not as much testing is happening. Do we really know what's going on with the new variants and so on? What's our status on testing currently? There's not a great demand for it as there was at one time.
Yeah, I think it's, if we look at the mass test site that is a state contract, that's the up and serve site, the demand is definitely going down in those areas. However, there are other testing options that are available that people are still taking advantage of. So, I think that testing demand has gone down mainly because our case rates have gone down. You have less contacts. That being said, our congregate facilities are continuing to do surveillance testing. If they discover a case, one case, then their testing cadences go up. I know that schools are continuing to do testing of staff. So I think that, and then with youth sports, like for higher risk, I know that there's testing going on there. So I think that there is underground, background surveillance testing that's happening. And there's other vendors aside from the mass test site that we have. So I think we are still testing above the statewide median, which affords us a downward adjustment in our case rates.
Okay, I'm still above the median. In terms of the cases that are being discovered currently, is there a shift to a younger population now?
Yeah, I would say we're seeing more in, people younger than 50 years of age. I think we've been seeing outbreaks in our two largest facilities because of testing. So that's an older population, but most of the people that are being tested are vaccinated. So we're not seeing necessarily secondary transmission. We are seeing, I think it is probably shifting younger. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
I suppose on one hand, as the more and more of the older population is vaccinated, it would make sense that positive tests show up in younger people.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, unless you're part of the sectors that got prioritized for vaccination first. So,
yeah.
You know, we know emergency service workers, education and childcare, and food and agriculture have been among the first sectors that have been vaccinated. And, you know, the demand for each of those sectors is going down, which has prepared us for the age-based strategy that the entire state is shifting to. Mm-hmm. So, you know, just to remind people, now we are vaccinating 50-plus and 16 to 64 with underlying medical conditions. And then pretty soon, you know, by Thursday, we're going to be able to people that are 16 years of age or older, regardless of underlying medical conditions, will be eligible for vaccination. However, that being said, it does not mean we have enough vaccine to vaccinate that entire population. And in fact, we are going to see our supplies go down in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, we reported on that earlier. The Johnson & Johnson manufacturing problem has resulted in a shortage. Stories I've read suggest it's a significant drop in the number available this week, and then it will drop a little bit more next week. And then do you expect the supply to rebound in that third week out from now?
I hope so. You know, I really think there's a lot of predictions that are made about supply. There are sometimes unexpected things that happen that reduce the supply. The projection was that supplies were supposed to increase in April. And, you know, at least for the next couple of weeks, that's not quite panning out. So I'm hopeful that it will increase.
Very good. Let's talk for a moment about that outbreak at the veterans home, and there's an investigation into this to try and figure out what happened there among a group of people that were vaccinated. What's the status on that? What do we know about it right now?
Well, right now we are working with the state, so it's not just the veterans home, but it's also Napa State. So there are two facilities that are state-run facilities. They do a lot of their testing at the California Department of Public Health Valencia Branch Lab, which was opened not too long ago. It was they contract with PerkinElmer, which is a testing company, I think, based out of Germany. So there have been they've identified that there have been positive people that have tested positive in both facilities. And however, when people were retested, they using other laboratories, the tests were negative. So the difference between what we see for the Valencia Branch Lab is that they are able to detect virus at lower levels of detection than other platforms. There was whole genome sequencing that was done in these specimens because, you know, I think their initial thought is this is a false positive, right? So there was more, the whole genome sequencing was performed and detected virus. So I think, you know, the majority of these cases, I would say, you know, if we were to take both facilities together, the majority of these facilities, the majority of the people that tested positive did not have symptoms. I would say in one facility, about 80%, 75% were vaccinated. In another facility, it was 65% of those that tested positive were vaccinated. So that's pretty much what's going on. We're continuing to work with the state to just figure out what the implications are of these people testing positive. Is there secondary transmission? I think those are areas that we're just still trying to work with the state on.
Are there other examples of this happening in other communities?
Yes, this is not unusual. I think we have heard of people that have tested positive that were previously fully vaccinated. And what we hear is that they're asymptomatic. And, you know, and then sometimes what you'll end up seeing is they might test positive for a variant. So that's pretty much what's happening here, is that we are seeing, you know, there's a West Coast variant that is circulating around, and that's, you know, that's what we're seeing in these facilities.
So the fact that one company's test or one lab's test is more sensitive than others, is it an area of concern to know that people are getting a negative test when they actually do have some level of the virus if they're going to, you know, through these other facilities?
Yeah, I think that, you know, there's a lot of questions. So, you know, how much does it make sense to go to a lower level of detection where you have higher cycle threshold values in order to, you know, to detect virus? In a congregate facility, you're more likely to see false negative tests. So a more sensitive test makes sense in a congregate facility because it's your highest risk setting. But I think the jury is out there about whether those that test positive actually cause secondary transmission elsewhere. And that's, we're not seeing secondary transmission. So it's possible that we're seeing lower levels of virus in people that are already vaccinated, and that it's possible that they're not necessarily transmitting it to other people. But I think that this really has to undergo some study in order to determine that. And we are at a point where we're venturing into the unknown, and that has to be looked at more thoroughly.
Intriguing. We're all becoming, armchair doctors. We do our reading and think we understand what's going on, then something like this comes out, and it's very confusing. There's a term that I've read, the term breakthrough is used, as I understand it, when a vaccinated person gets the disease anyway. Do these cases, do the Yountville and State Hospital cases represent breakthrough?
Yes, absolutely. You know, the majority of people that have tested positive in both those facilities have been vaccinated fully. You know, and the residents or the patients are fully vaccinated. The staff are not fully vaccinated. So some of the staff that tested positive were not vaccinated. And, you know, out of both those outbreaks, we only had one symptomatic person. They had classic symptoms. They were unvaccinated. That one, you know, was pretty much an easy one to determine. But everybody else was asymptomatic.
Very interesting. I'm sure a lot of people are interested in what's happening with it, and we'll learn more as time passes. So, as I mentioned, this week, starting on the 15th, indoor gatherings are being permitted again under public health guidelines, with obviously a number of restrictions. What does that look like, first of all, if you can describe that a little bit? And does this present a concern for you about any kind of a rebound?
Yeah, so the indoor guidance, and I don't have the information in front of me, and the best way to really to hone into that is COVID-19.ca.gov. What it looks at is capacity thresholds indoors. So first of all, it has to be assigned seating, social distancing, full on masking, and then also making sure that eating and drinking doesn't happen, you know, in the same place where, you know, you have to have assigned seating, and you can only eat in certain places. And the way is the reason why it's to diminish transmission, because your highest risk is once you take the mask off and start eating and drinking, and then you don't put the mask back on. And then they have capacity limits, and I can't tell you off the top of my head what they are, because they are different depending on whether they're outdoor, indoor, vaccinated, unvaccinated. It's really it's really complicated. I could memorize when we went to from a red to an orange tier what capacity limits were going to be for businesses, but I can tell you for this one, I can't. I have to look at the grid.
Mm-hmm.
So you can increase your capacity indoors if you can show that 100% of the attendees have been tested and have all tested negative or have been vaccinated. So if you show that, you can increase your capacity anywhere from, you know, you can either double capacity depending on the tier you're in, or you reach a maximum. So I think it depends on the size of the venue. And it depends what tier you're on. I wish I could tell you more, but I have not memorized it. It's that complicated.
Yeah, I understand. That's why we have, you know, the internet and pamphlets. We can go back and refer to them. But it's, in terms of concerns about, you know, sparking up a new wave of the disease, do you think, you know, particularly, I'm just pulling a couple of things out of this for a moment. A church, as an example, if they increase capacity in a church, well, you're mostly drawing people from the local community going to a church, right? If you also are now allowing conferences, conventions, business meetings of that kind where people travel, that's a whole different can of bananas, and you've got a, you know, a mixture of people from different places. What are your thoughts about the risks now, mid-April here, with resuming conferences and conventions, which of course are very important to the Bay Area economy and to Napa's economy?
Well, there's definitely a risk. So any type of activities that you do indoors, particularly where, you know, it increases the risk. However, I think as long as the masking and the social distancing measures are followed, that decreases risk. The other thing is to make sure that if you're going to do something indoors, that you have a lot of ventilation. Hmm. Ventilation is really important because there's a lot more of an airborne transmission component to COVID-19. So it's a matter of following those measures. And if you want to increase capacity within your venue, I mean, you know, businesses are going to have to, you know, if it's a live event that's indoors or if you're having a conference indoors, you know, the hotels or event centers are going to really have to look at, you know, testing and vaccination, you know, proof of vaccination and proof of testing. Now, the how to do it is not determined yet. I mean, at least guidance has not been issued by the state for a statewide system to look at that. So, and it's not something that counties have. So I want to just manage expectations because this blueprint framework is just changing rapidly, and, you know, and you have vaccination changing rapidly. So I think it's going to just take some thinking outside the box.
All right. It's going to be a week for staying outside the box with Dr. Karen Berluccio, Napa County's public health official and officer, and visiting with us once a week here on the Monday Wine Country Live Morning Show. Thanks for your time today, and hang in there. We're making progress, I think, right?
Yes, I think so.
Yeah. Okay.
I think things are looking up. We're over 100. We have administered over 100,000 vaccinations, mm-hmm, in Napa County. So that part's great. And we just have to keep chugging away at that.
Yep. One foot in front of the other. Thanks again. Appreciate your time. Have a good day.
You too, Barry.
Right, take care. Bye-bye.
You're listening to the Wine Country Live Morning Show with Barry Martin
on KVON Napa, 1440 AM and KVON.com.